All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves this week in the beginning of Parshas Bo. Remember again, although the focus of Bo clearly is the Exodus narrative, again we have the conclusion of the Makos, Karban Pesach, and Klal Yisrael really gearing up ultimately to leave Mitzrayim. Nestled in the middle of this Parsha is a very significant event. Because nestled in the middle of this parasha is the first mitzvah. Remember, if we go back to the first Rashi in the Torah, so Rashi asks a very basic question in Bereishis. And Rashi says, Lo haya Torah, the Torah should not have begun, only from where? Hachodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadosh. Meaning, Rashi operates to the basic question, which is, the Torah is not a storybook. The Torah is a book of law. And as such, again, we expect the Torah to focus on the laws, the mitzvah, 613 of them. But at the end of the day, the Torah spends an entire sefer, an entire book, focusing on stories. Granted, we know those stories have moral, ethical, and legal ramifications. But Rashi actually points to our parasha, and Rashi says, in truth, the Torah could have started from parashas Bo, from this section. Look at number one. Vayomer Shema Moshe vel Aaron beretz Yisrael leimor. Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron while they were in Egypt, saying, Hachodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadoshim. This month will be for you the first of all months. Rishon hu l'chodesh Hashanah, to be the first month for all the months of the year. Dabru al-kol hadas Yisrael le'mor, and then he goes on to speak about the laws of Karban Pesach. Speak to the assembly of the Jewish people, saying, Be'esor l'chodesh on the 10th of the month, v'yichu lohem ish set le'beis avos set le'bayis. And each person, let each man take one, let each one take a lamb for each parental home, a lamb for each household. So leaving aside Karban Pesach for a little bit, the Torah gives us the first national mitzvah, the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. Now, what does Kiddush HaChodesh mean? On a technical level, again, it's actually very apropos. We just celebrated a secular New Year. So we know, again, the Jewish calendar operates a little bit differently in that the Jewish calendar obviously is a lunar calendar. It's based on the moon. And each and every month, the way we cycle in time, each month, I'm sorry? No, it's not in the sun. It's the holidays are based on the sun. But the calendar is a pure lunar calendar. The calendar is only based on the moon. I'm sorry? It's a leap year, but it's a lunar calendar. You have to reconcile the lunar calendar with the seasons, which are solar based, but it's a lunar calendar. Chaya, I prepared a lot for this year. You gotta trust me on this one. So here the Torah gives us this first mitzvah. So what happens? Again, we know on a technical, mechanistic level, so what happens? The Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah spends a lot of time focusing on this. So the Gemara says, witnesses see the crescent of the moon looking a certain way. They come before the high court in Jerusalem, the Sanhedrin Yerushalayim. They give their testimony. They're cross-examined. It goes back and forth. And finally, if their testimony checks out, the Beis Din declares Mekudash, the Beis Din declares that the new month has been sanctified, and it's Rosh Chodesh. And some months have 29 days, some months have 30 days. Okay, so what's interesting, so this is the first mitzvah that ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. This mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. Now, it always bothered me that this is the first mitzvah that God gave us. You know, we have an amazing Torah filled with beautiful mitzvahs. And if you had to choose the first mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us. Remember, this is the first. First always set the tone. So if you had to choose the first mitzvah that God was going to give us to kind of initiate us nationally into the service of God, into the service of mitzvahs, what would you have chosen? I think Shabbos is probably a good one. One of those covenantal mitzvahs. Shabbos, Bris Milah. It's true, they do Bris Milah a little bit later on. And although we had Bris Milah, again, already in Sefer Bereishis, but remember, the fact that Avraham Avinu did Bris Milah does not create a halachically binding obligation on us for Bris Milah. That comes again later on in Parshas Tazria. But the point is, there are so many other mitzvahs that one could have chosen as a first. So many other mitzvahs that are more exciting, that are more invigorating, that are seemingly more important. In fact, if you look at number two, the Rabbeinu Bechayer, it's the following. He notes something very interesting. The Torah says, HaChodesh hazeh lochem rosh chadashim. God is speaking to Moshe and Aaron. He says to Moshe and Aaron, this month will be for you the first of all months. Lo omru dabru al kol hadas b'nei Yisrael HaChodesh hazeh lochem. Rabbeinu Bechayi points out that God does not say to Moshe and Aaron, speak to the assembly of the Jewish people. God never orders Moshe to convey this information to the general Jewish populace. Why not? Ki haya b'mashma sh'mitzvah b'chol echad b'Yisrael l'kbo ha'chadashim la'av r'shonim ve'ein ha'mitzvah ki'im le'beizdin mumchim ki Moshe v'Aaron. The truth is, interestingly enough, remember, who has the obligation of Kiddush HaKodesh? It's not a mitzvah that devolves upon the general public. It's not a mitzvah that most people are involved in. In fact, again, it's only a couple of people that are actively involved in this mitzvah every single month. For the common man, he or she has absolutely no real involvement in this particular mitzvah. What happens? I hear when Rosh Chodesh is, I hear when the new month is. Wonderful, I know how to set my calendar, and that's it. So Rabbeinu Bechaye compounds the question. Out of all the things that God could have commanded us first, why Kiddush HaChodesh? Number one, it's not a mitzvah that is applicable to most people. It's not a mitzvah that most people are involved in on a month-to-month basis. And number two, you'll excuse me, but it's kind of boring. Meaning, we have some very exciting mitzvos. We have some incredibly riveting mitzvos. We have meaningful mitzvos, passionate mitzvos. Kiddush HaChodesh, the fact that we have to declare the new month, arrange the calendar, is interesting, but I wouldn't exactly call it riveting. It doesn't have anybody glued to the end of their seat, to the edge of their seat, wondering, how are you going to do Kiddush HaChodesh? It's a functional mitzvah that's necessary for the tracking of time. So the fundamental question we're going to try to explore tonight is, why did God give us this mitzvah as the first? Considering you have 612 other ones to choose from, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose this? So Mir Tashem, we're going to try to explore a number of different approaches. Let's begin with number three. Says the Kli Yakar, our first approach for tonight. The Kli Yakar writes, and he gives a fascinating insight here. He says, "Utzrichin anu litein tam od." So the Kli Yakar asks our question, or we ask the Kli Yakar's question. Why does God choose to begin our initiation into mitzvos with this mitzvah again of sanctification of the new month, sanctification of the new moon? So he says something amazing. Again, just to be clear one more time on the mechanics of this mitzvah, because I don't want to take it for granted that everyone's familiar with this. Remember again, the way that you know that the moon is full, mid-month is very important for this narrative as well, because understand, God took us out, what day? The 15th of Nisan. Why the 15th? Because the moon is full. You see, understand something, we live in a time of artificial light. So the truth is, we barely notice the moon. But before artificial light, so there is a dramatic, meaning if you're ever like in the country or ever somewhere, where there's not a lot of artificial light, a full moon gives off an incredible amount of light. HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely takes us out the middle of the month so that it would be a luminescent light, a luminescent night, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ultimately taking us out of Egypt. So remember, then as the month progresses, the moon fades away until the moon pretty much becomes invisible to us. It's there, obviously, but we can't see it. The new month is ultimately signaled by a small sliver of the moon. When you see that beginning sliver of the moon, that's the sign that the new month is here. That's this mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. So again, the Kli Yakar number three asks, why is this here? He happens to ask a second question, which is, why does the mitzvah of Karban Pesach, which we saw in number one, the Paschal Lamb, why does that follow on the heels of the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh? And the Kli Yakar gives a very interesting insight. He says, V'habeyor al zeh, So remember, the Egyptians, as many cultures, were very into astrological signs. And they believed that what was the dominant astrological sign? What he calls the mazel of the Tala. Literally, the mazel, the zodiac sign of Tala. Tala literally means what? A sheep. But the truth is, what this probably sounds like is what today they call Aries. Right? Aries is a ram. Aries is a zodiac sign of a ram. And Aries usually is this this Pesach time of year. I think it's like end of March through the beginning of May, something like that. So again, whether the Egyptians were focusing on Aries or some equivalent to it, but the dominant zodiac sign they associated with was this Aries, this ram, sheep, zodiac. He says, Lefichach, therefore, this explains a lot of things. Tavas Mitzrayim Kol Ro'eh Tzom. That's why if you remember again, when the family of Yaakov Avinu comes down to Egypt at the end of Chumash Bereishis, what does Yosef tell his brothers to tell Paro their profession is? Shepherds. Why? The Torah says because it was a disgrace for Egyptians to shepherd sheep. Now they had sheep, they just had other people shepherding their flocks. Why would they not be shepherds? Why would they not shepherd sheep? Because they worshiped sheep as a deity, as a god. Therefore, he says, he goes on, Ki ke'ei nachol nomar, shahamanhig, yemunod mizulasa kirohu, va'al kein, tziva Hashem lishchot ha-pesach, lefi shemazol tolo, hu rishon u'bechor l'chol ha-mazolos, va'al yidei shchitas ha-tolo, yifkod Hashem al tzvamorom. So first of all, the Kli Yaakov works backwards. He says, now we also understand the true nature of Korban Pesach. Why does God command us about a Paschal lamb? Because what was the entire essence of shechting the sheep? What was the message? The message was one of theological supremacy. What God was telling the Jewish people was take the sheep, which represents the God, the deity of the Egyptians, and slaughter it. Why are you slaughtering it? Because your God told you to do so. So it wasn't just enough to physically beat the Egyptians. It was not just enough to emancipate the Jewish people. We had to assert theological supremacy. How do you assert theological supremacy? By essentially slaughtering their gods and then being powerless to do anything about it. But the Kli Yaakov goes on. He says, "V'hine chodesh Nisan, huzman kenisas Hashemesh b'mazal tala." What happens during the month of Nisan? So the month of Nisan is also the zodiac sign of Aries. "V'naase chodesh ze rosh lechodshi hashana, kedei shezikaron yitzias mitzrayim neged einenu tamim." So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do, says the Kli Yaakov? HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the first month of our year, because remember, in certain respects, Nisan becomes the first month of the year for different purposes. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the month that we left Egypt the first month of our calendrical year, which also happens to be the month that has the zodiac sign of the ram, of the lamb. All of this representing what? Theological supremacy over the Egyptians. So according to the Kli Yaakov, and by the way, this also helps us understand, number one, why the Torah juxtaposes the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctification of the new moon, the new month, together with Korban Pesach. Why is God placing an emphasis on this month? Because this is the month when the Egyptian deity would be strongest. And what happens in the month of Aries, in the month of the ram, in the month of the lamb, what happens dafka in that month? God redeems us. Our God overcomes their God. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want this month of Nisan to be the first of your months. Why is this important for us? Because this was part of establishing theological supremacy over the idolatrous, polytheistic Egyptian culture. Our God took over the month of Nisan. Our God usurped the power over the zodiac sign of Aries. Our God asserted his supremacy over the Egyptian God. We asserted that supremacy in terms of time. Again, the zodiac sign, ultimately of Aries, has been eclipsed by our God, and by actively shechting the Paschal lamb, which ultimately represented the deity of Mitzrayim, we again asserted that theological supremacy. So this is the Kli Yaakov. Therefore, again, the reason why this mitzvah is important for us is not necessarily as much for its future impact, but for its present impact of, again, creating that theological supremacy over zodiac sign of Aries, over the sheep, over the lamb gods of the Egyptians. Okay, second approach. Take a look at number four. The Sefer HaChinuch gives a much simpler approach to all of this. The Sefer HaChinuch writes, Mishrashei mitzvah zu, at the root of this mitzvah, kedei sheya'asu Yisrael mo'adei Hashem bizmanon. You know why you need a calendar, a fixed calendar? Because in order to celebrate Yamim Tovim, you need to know how to track time. In order to be able to celebrate Yamim Tovim properly, you need to have a set system of time. He says, Shashem Yitzbarach Tziva La'azos Pesach Bizman Shatavua Ba'aviv. God tells us to go out, for example, and celebrate Pesach when the wheat begins to ripen. Kamosha Kasuv Shamor Es Chodesh Aviv Asisa Pesach V'chag Asukos Bizman Ha'osif. Okay, so the Sefer HaChinuch essentially says, do you know why God gives us this mitzvah of the calendar first? Because without the calendar, you can't have Yamim Tovim. Why are Yamim Tovim important for us? Because Yamim Tovim represent our spiritual anchors throughout the year. Each and every Yom Tov carries with it its own specific message. And the Yom Tovim, remember, occur throughout the different parts of the year. There are spiritual anchors. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes this idea in elsewhere, that there's a mitzvah aliyah l'regel. There's a mitzvah to ascend to Jerusalem 3 times a year for the pilgrimage festivals. Why? All of that is to keep us anchored to God and to keep us anchored to each other. You know, the nature of man is that people get involved in their own life and their own things, and they tend not to think about the collective all that much. The Yamim Tovim ultimately are our ways to remain anchored to one another and our ways to remain anchored to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, essentially, the Yamim Tovim are one of the most important parts of our Jewish identity. But in order to have Yom Tov, what do you need? You need a calendar. Therefore, again, says the Sefer HaChinuch, that's why the first mitzvah that God gives us is establishing the calendar, because that paves the way, that lays the foundation for the establishment of Yomim Tovim afterwards. Okay, take a look at number five. Rav Hirsch says something truly beautiful over here. Rav Hirsch writes, he says, look at the middle, paragraph A, the middle of that first line there. It is not to be the conjunction of the moon with the sun, not the moon receiving the rays of illumination afresh, that is to induce the beginnings of our months. It is not that to which our celebration of new moon is to be dedicated. But each time the moon finds the sun again, each time it receives its rays of light afresh, God wants his people to find him again and to be illuminated with fresh rays of his light. Whenever and however in running their course, they have had to pass through periods of darkness and obscurity, the moon finding itself again in conjunction with the sun is only to be a model for our finding ourselves again with God. The rejuvenation of the moon, a picture of and an incentive to our own rejuvenation. Turn the page. One more piece, Rav Hirsch writes, so that it is not the astronomical procedure, nor astronomical calculations, but we ourselves, we have to make our chodesh, and to fix the day of our moed, our finding ourselves with God. Paragraph C. So the Jewish consecration of the new moon is an institution for the periodical, fresh, spiritual, moral rejuvenation of Israel by finding itself in conjunction with its God. Our sages put the whole idea in pithy brevity in their explanation of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem by Dugma Lachem. This renewal of the moon gives you your model. And they give meaning of Rosh Chodesh, which literally finds its expression. So Rav Hirsch goes out to say, so Rav Hirsch says very beautifully, and you could read the rest on your own. Rav Hirsch writes, what's the whole concept of the lunar calendar? Meaning one of the major distinctions between the lunar and the solar calendar is the sun is a constant. The sun is always there. The moon waxes and wanes. The moon's at different times of the month is very strong, very bright, very luminescent. And at times, it is totally eclipsed and obscured. Says Rav Hirsch, this is an incredible metaphor for life. An incredible metaphor in the human condition and in human development. There are times that we are like the moon in the middle of the month. There are times when we burn bright. There are times when we're on fire. There are times when we are luminescent. There are times when we're doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing. We're living how we're supposed to be living. We're living up to the expectations that the Ribono Shel Olam has of us. And there are times when we're barely visible. There are times when we just fall off the grid. There are times that we fall. There are times that we fail. There are times that we lose our light. And there are times where we lose so much light that we aren't even visible. Says Rav Hirsch, this is the nature of the human condition. But you know what the amazing part is? No matter how dark you become, no matter how eclipsed you become, no matter how much light you lose, there's always the ability to rejuvenate and to regenerate. There is always the ability to come back and to burn bright again. Says Rav Hirsch, the whole way we deal with time, our whole calendar, is to be a metaphor for the human condition. Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us a solar calendar? Would have been much easier, right? It's constant, it's there. It really has very little ambiguity associated with it, because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to be our tracking of time, to be a metaphor for the way we track our existence, for the way we track our lives. Just like the moon sometimes burns bright, sometimes it doesn't, so too sometimes we burn bright, sometimes we don't. Sometimes the moon lights up even the darkest situations. Sometimes we have the ability to do that as well. And sometimes the moon totally disappears. And sometimes so do we. But just as the moon comes back each and every month No matter how many times, so to speak, the moon loses its luster, no matter how many times the light of the moon is eclipsed by something else, it always finds the courage, so to speak, to burn again the next month. Says Rav Hirsch, that's the metaphor for the Jewish people. No matter what happens in life, no matter how many times we lose our light, we lose our luster, no matter how often we are eclipsed by the darkness around us, we always have the ability to somehow, some way, rejuvenate, regenerate, and shine again. And now, according to Rav Hirsch, we understand why this is the first mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given to Klal Yisrael. After all, again, think about it. What greater life-affirming lesson than this? Sometimes the greatest challenges we have is not just simply when we fail, because failing is a part of life, and failing is something we all contend with. We don't struggle with failing. What do we really struggle with? We struggle with failing repeatedly. That's the problem. That's the problem. You know, if I fail once, okay, I pick myself back up. But in the fact that I fail, and sometimes I fail with the same things over and over and over. As the pasuk says, Sheva Yipol Tzadik. Right? It's not uncommon even for the most righteous person to fail seven times. And the Parshim say seven, by the way, is an underestimate, right? Seven is taking it easy. Sometimes we fall, and we fall over the same things over and over. And when that happens, we often are miyayish. We often give up hope. We think that, you know what, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to right the ship. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, if you're ever in doubt about your ability to pick yourself up, if you're ever in doubt about your ability to regenerate and rejuvenate, just look upward. Go out at the beginning of the month, and barely any light is visible. Go out a couple of days later, it's a little bit brighter. Go out to the middle of the month, and it's a beautiful luminescent moon. And then what happens? What happens one day after the moon is beautiful and luminescent? What happens? Begins to decrease. You know, you try this. Try this. We have a new month upon us now. A good chodesh tevun. It's Rosh Chodesh Shvat tonight. Right? So you'll go outside tonight, right? And you'll see nothing, or you'll see a little something. Right? But go out on the 15th, and it's amazing. But amazingly enough, go out, not as much on the 16th, but go out two nights later. Go out two nights later. And it's amazing the dramatic lessening of light that has occurred within 2 days. That's a metaphor for the human condition. There are times that we reach such high levels, and we're so happy with the people we are and the lives we're leading. And then what happens? One little misstep, one little mistake, one little wrong decision, and I've compromised myself so terribly. And I get so down on myself. How could I have done this? How could I have allowed this to occur? I'll never get back up. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, not true. If the moon could do it, I can do it. And this was the life-affirming lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving to this new nation of emancipated slaves. He was telling them, I have very high hopes for you. I have very high aspirations for you. But I also accept the fact that what? That you will fail. And I also accept the fact that you will fail repeatedly. But that's okay, because that's part of the human condition. As long as what? As long as you find the courage to regenerate and rejuvenate. Because to fail and to fall and to remain on the ground, that's unacceptable. That the Ribbono Shel Olam has no patience for. To fall and get back up, God is more than happy to help. To fall and to stay down, to give up, to throw your hands up, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, sorry, I have no patience for that. And if you think you can't, all you need to do, follow the moon. The moon becomes our guide for life. If it can regenerate and rejuvenate, so can we. We come now to our fourth approach, the Svarno. So now, this is another very interesting approach that fits very beautifully into this first mitzvah paradigm. The Svarno writes, the Svarno at first sounds very simple. The Svarno says, "Achodesh hazalechem rosh chadoshim, mikan ve'elech, yihyu hachadoshim shalochem." So the Svarno writes, that what does it mean? This month is your month. This is the first of your months. The Svarno says what that means is, from here on in, the months belong to you. What does that mean? La'asos bahem kirtzonchem. You could do whatever you want with your months. Aval b'mei hashibud lo hayu yimeichem shalochem. But when you were enslaved, you did not own your own time. Aval hayu la'avodas achirim uretzonam. You were always working for others and at their whim. Lefichach rishon hu l'chodshei hashanah. Therefore, this is the first for all the months of the year. Now, ultimately, your existence of free choice exists. What is the Svarno saying? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the mitzvah of Kedesh HaChodesh, of the new month, of the new moon, what he's giving us is the gift of time. If there's one thing that the slave, that the servant does not have control over, it's time. He works when his master says he needs to work, and he's off when his master says he's off, and he has no control over his schedule, he has no control over his existence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the first thing I'm going to give you is the power over time. Because now, again, remember, even though this is specifically referring to the idea of setting the calendar, the fact that we have control over the calendar essentially says that we have control over time. We are no longer at the whim of another. We control how ultimately we use our time. If you look at number 7, the Medrash says so beautifully, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim Lachem Hu Maser. I have given you over the institution of time. Velo atem nisurim biyado. But you are not handed over to the concept of time. She'im lo nira bizmano mikachim ose Yisrael acheshbon. And you know, the Medrash goes, I didn't put it on the sheet. I should have put it on. The Medrash writes, you know, when does the Yom HaDin, when does the Day of Judgment occur? When does it occur? So you know, Day of Judgment is Rosh Hashanah. When does it occur? When Beis Din decides to declare the new month. Right? When the Jewish court decides to declare the new month, that's when God has the opportunity to sit in judgment. Now you understand what that means? The Ribono Shel Olam judges everything. Whatever's going to happen to us throughout the year, God decides that. But yet God cannot begin that process until when? Until we, mortal man, has decided that now it's Rosh Chodesh. It's Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, therefore it's Rosh Hashanah. So according to what the Sfarno and the Medrash are trying to highlight is this idea that the power of this first mitzvah is that it's to impress upon us that we are free. It's to impress upon us that we are no longer at the whim of another. It is to impress upon us that we control our lives. Specifically, we control time. For 210 years, we had no control over our day-to-day lives. We had no control over how we spent our minutes, our hours, our days, our weeks, our months, our years. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the first thing I'm going to give you to show you that you're free is I'm giving you, former slaves, dominion over time. If you look at number 8, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kohen Kuk, Rav Tzvi Yehuda has a number of sichos, a number of essays on the parsha, and Rav Tzvi Yehuda writes about this dynamic, and he says, HaChodesh HaZalachem, he says, HaChodesh HaZalachem Rosh Chodeshim, Mitzvah Zos, Kishura L'Kiddushas Hazmanim. Rav Tzvi Yehuda has a very interesting formulation over here. You see, whereas the Sfarno and the Medrash understand that what God is giving us is power over time, he's giving us literally the power to control time. We are no longer at the mercy of time, but rather, again, we control the dynamic of time. Rav Tzvi Yehuda understands that God is giving us something much more nuanced. He's giving us the ability to infuse holiness into time. This is a unique privilege of the Jewish people. HaChodesh HaZalachem, what does it mean? This month is for you. Yisrael hi mekachim es hazmanim. We have the ability to sanctify time. Hazman, this is what Rav Tzvi Yehuda writes, hu maseches mufla. Time is a very interesting thing. V'nichtevu alav harbe mechkarim madayim ufilosofiyim. And everybody writes about time, right? So philosophers, scholars, everybody writes about the dynamic of time. Hazman hu davar meshunah. Now, why is time something so amazing? She efshar lemashesho be'etzbaos kimo hamako. Here's what's amazing about time. You can't quantify it in that you can't put your hands around it, and yet it governs every aspect of our life. You see, let's say as opposed to the material world, which is quantifiable and definable, time is not, we quantify time in minutes and hours and days, so on and so forth. But the truth is, you know, if I want to tell you the size of this room is X amount of feet by X amount of feet, I could quantify the dimensions of this room. But if I want to show you how much a certain amount of time is, I can't show you that. I can't put it, I can't hold it in my hands. I could describe it in units of measurement, but it really is an immeasurable amorphous entity. He goes on, he says, Hazman, Einol Dover Shiyesh Lo Metzius Kishava Atzmo. It's interestingly enough, time is not independently important. But yet our reality is intertwined with the dynamic of time. Man who was created in the image of God is in this world. And time is what regulates our existence in this world. How fast Hanashama Begov Beseder Ha Historia in Yonazman? Hazman Hu Ha Adam Ba'olam. Binush Sheikh skipping 9 or 2. Yisro Himikachimas Hazman. Himigat. So Rav Kook goes on to explain, Rav Tzihuda Kohen Kook goes on to explain that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving us was the power to be Mekadesh, to infuse holiness in time. It's not just that you see the Sfarno and the Medrash understand that God is literally giving us power over time, and that He allows us to decide when the month begins, when the month ends. That is a very strong, that is a very significant amount of power. Rishuda says, that's fine, but that only talks to me about months. What about minutes? What about hours? What about days? That's not part of the calculation of the month. Rishuda says, HaChodesh HaZelacha means God gives us the opportunity to infuse holiness into time. But what does this mean? Take a look at number 9. So I think to explain this idea about Tzvi Yehuda, I want to show you something amazing. This is from a Sefer Me'or LeTorah by Rav Yaakov Ariel. Rav Yaakov Ariel is the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan. So he has a number of beautiful essays on the parashah. He writes the following. He says, skip down a little bit. He says, Maskeres kivi'usa shalazman b'dei adam, elo rak zechus, ela be'ikr achrayis atzuma. Says Rav Ariel, the fact that God gave us control over time is not just a nice privilege, but it is an incredible achrayis, it's an incredible responsibility. How so? He says, this is a very profound insight. I love linatzel ul'argein es zmano b'tzura hayi'il b'yoser. When you have control over time, then what's your obligation? Your obligation is to maximize its usage. Your obligation is to maximize every unit of time. Asur la'adam losis lizman lishlot bo. You should underline this phrase. A person is not permitted to allow time to rule over him. Elohu misugal v'chayiv lishlot bizman shlita maleya. I do not allow time to rule over me. Instead, what? I rule over time. What does that mean? Lachin ha'chachamim shepishu es ishiyusam b'tzura merabis. Hema yidun l'shulton bizman. Gam hema musmachin mikvah sidre zmanin. Lo rak la'am Yisrael, afilu ma'alchi asharis. Toos eifar lomar, shelo eved ein zman. So it's a mistake, says Rav Ariel, to say that a slave doesn't have time. A slave has time. Ba'od shelo ben chorin yesh zman panui. And to think that a free person has plenty of time. Adrabah, I say just the opposite. Yitachin matzov shebo le'eved, yesh yoser zman panui me'asher le ben chorin. It could very well be that a slave has more free time than a free person. So what's the difference between them? The fundamental difference is the slave doesn't rule over his time. But the free man is the ruler over his time. Now, what does this mean? Rav Ariel says something amazing. He says the slave might work harder, but the slave has more free time than the free person. Because the free person understands that there is no moment to spare. There is no moment to let slip through your fingers. What does this mean? Yesh kan paradox. That's Hebrew. Right? Yesh kan paradox ma'anyein. There's a very strange paradox here. He says, ha'eved note mitiv olivatala ein lo motivatsia la'avot. Rav Ariel says, the Eved, as hard as he works, the Avadim, you know, the Gemara talks about the fact that slaves were known to be immoral individuals. Why? Because they have too much free time on their hand. But isn't that a contradiction? A slave with free time? Isn't that the whole idea of being a slave, that the master owns your time? Everybody has free time. But the question is, the slave has no motivation to do anything with his free time. Why does he have no motivation? Ki avodasa kefuya alav. Why does a slave have no motivation to do something with his time in which he's not working for his master? Why no motivation? Because what is he working towards? What is he working towards? He doesn't own his life. He doesn't own his existence. He doesn't own the dynamic of his personhood. He's property. He's owned by someone else. So you know what? If I have free time, you know what I'm going to do? You know what I'm going to do? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Why? Because why should I break a sweat to advance my life when it's not my life that I'm really advancing? I have no autonomy. I have no control. I don't control the nature, the trajectory, or direction of my life. Lu'umoso, on the other hand, ben chorin oved v'rotze la'avod yoser min ha'eved. Amazingly enough, you know who wants to work more than the servant? The free man. The free man wants to work even more and harder than the servant. Why? Ki avodaso einenu eina l'ma'an zulaso. Because the free man doesn't work for another. The free man works for himself. Avodaso hi l'ma'an atzmo. The free man works for himself. Hu amachlit eiza avoda la'avod ube eiza hespek. He decides what work to do and how much to do of it. Who oved mitoch motivitzia ishit. He works because of his own personal motivation. What Rav Ariel is saying is something truly amazing. Rav Ariel is saying is, you know, people often have this idea that the slave works harder than the free man. He says, that's not true. The free person works a lot harder, or I should say, should work a lot harder. Why? Because the free person understands that they have control over the nature and direction of their life, which means what? There is not a moment to spare. Every single minute has to be utilized. Every single moment somehow has to be used in a productive way. Of course, there are times to relax. Of course, there are times to take a break. But even relaxing and taking a break for the Ben Chorin is only for one purpose, and that's for what? That's to be able to come back reinvigorated, re-energized, to be able to do more. That's, you know, in Judaism, this notion of, you know, sometimes people have this image, you know, all I want to do is, you know, sit, you know, on the beach, you know, with a drink in my hand and look out into the water. And that, so that's fine for like a day, maybe two, a long weekend, right? But at the end of the day, that's not life. Because the Ben Chorin understands, I have the ability to do something magnificent. I have the ability to do something amazing. I have the ability to accomplish something. And it's in my hands to do that. So the Ben Chorin says, you know what's even more amazing? I'm in charge of my time. I can do with my time what I please. And perhaps this is what Rav Kook meant when he said that the Ben Chorin has the ability to infuse Kedusha into his time. What does it mean to infuse holiness into time? How do you infuse holiness into time? How do you do that? By maximizing it. By utilizing it. My friends, if you say at the end of the day, I just didn't have enough time to accomplish the things that I wanted to accomplish, you're fooling yourself. There is enough time to accomplish everything you want to accomplish. A, you just have to make sure you're working on the right things and you have the right priorities and you're using your time for the correct things. And you have to make sure that you're utilizing your time appropriately. You have to make sure that you're committed to maximizing those moments. That's what it means. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. Yes, so the Sfarno comes on, the Sfarno Medrash say, HaChodesh Baruch Hu is giving us control over time. That's whereas before we were slaves, ultimately the Pharaoh controlled our time. Now we're free people, we control time. But what does it mean to control your time? That's what it means. I control the calendar. That's the big chap of controlling my time. Says Rav Kook, no, controlling your time means the ability to infuse holiness in your time. Says Rav Ariel, and how do you infuse holiness in your time? By maximizing every moment. I have control over not just my days, but I have control over my minutes. I have control as to how I use every single moment of time. And if I choose to use those moments wisely, I infuse Kedusha in those moments, and that is the ultimate manifestation of freedom. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and gives the Jewish people, this is the first mitzvah, because this is not just about the calendar. This is not just about a calendrical event that occurs once a month that involves less than 1% of the population. No, this is about how to live your life day to day. So many people are slaves to time. So many people ultimately allow time to rule over them and they don't rule over time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. Time is yours. Time is yours. You're free people. Infuse Kedusha into your moments. Take responsibility for your lives. Maximize each and every minute of time you have. So now, let's just review. We now have gone through four different approaches in trying to understand why it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this mitzvah of Kiddush HaKodesh first. Remember, what appears to be at first glance a very unglamorous, very simple, and to be honest, somewhat boring mitzvah. So why was this the first mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us? Remember, our first approach was the Kli Yakar, because by ultimately establishing Chodesh Nisan as the first month, the time when the zodiac sign of Aries, the lamb, the sheep, the goat is dominant, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes that the beginning of our year, ultimately to assert theological supremacy over the Egyptians. Second approach, Sefer Achinuch, the anchors of the Jewish people are the Yomim Tovim, which God is going to give us in just a moment. He's going to give us Pesach in the very next Pasuk. But in order to have Yomim Tovim, what do you have to have? You have to have a calendar. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu first give us the calendar in order that he could then give us the anchors of the Yomim Tovim. Our third approach, Rav Hirsch, because what happens with the way we declare the new month is a metaphor for the human condition. The same way that the moon waxes and wanes, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, I'm freeing you, and I'm giving you incredible opportunities, and you're going to be a people of great destiny, but you're going to fall, you're going to fail, you're going to lose your light. But that's okay. That's part of the dynamic of the human condition. You just must pledge to me and pledge to yourselves that even when you go dark, you will find the courage to rejuvenate and to regenerate. You will find the courage to get back up and shine again. And even if you fall every single month, and even if you feel like your life repeats a constant pattern of shining and then regressing, shining and then regressing, it's okay. Because that's how life is. As long as you find the courage to keep getting back up and keep on shining. We saw again our fourth approach, which was the Svarno, the Medrash, Rav Kook, and ultimately Rav Ariel. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving us was control over time. So yes, on the most basic level, it's an affirmation of our freedom. We don't have to punch the clock to the master. But on a deeper level, what God is telling us is the Eved has absolutely no motivation to use his moments wisely. Why? Because where is his life going? Where is he heading? Why should I work hard if I'm not really going to get ahead in life? What is the point of working hard if at the end of the day I'm just someone else's chattel? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, HaKodesh HaZelechem. You're free people. And because you're free people, you determine the nature, quality, and trajectory of your life. And therefore, use your moments wisely. Infuse Kiddusha into those moments. Maximize each and every moment. Which finally leads us now for our last approach for this evening. Take a look at number 10. So for this last approach, what I want to draw your attention to is a juxtaposition. Remember, right before the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, right before this mitzvah of the new month, of the calendar of the new month, so we had the ninth of the 10 plagues, the plague of darkness. Now, I want to point out to you that whenever you see juxtapositions in the Torah, they are not haphazard. Meaning, if you think about this, God could have given us this mitzvah anytime, right? He could have given it to us in the beginning of Shmos. He could have given it to us after the plague of the firstborn. He could have given it to us at any particular point in time. But yet, the Torah chooses to convey it right on the heels of the Makah of Choshech, right on the heels of the plague of darkness. Why? So to appreciate this, let's spend 2 minutes on the plague of darkness itself. Number 10, Lo ro'u ish es achiv. So remember, now Egypt is blanketed by darkness. And during that darkness, one man did not see his fellow. V'lo kamu ish mitachtov, and no one was able to get up. Shlosh es yamim, for 3 days. Ulchol b'nei Yisrael hayor b'moshvosam. But the Jewish people had light in their dwellings. Okay, so the Egyptians are blanketed by darkness. Jewish people have light in their dwellings. Now what's interesting is number 11. The Chizkuni makes an interesting observation. The Chizkuni writes, hayor b'moshvosam. What does it mean? Torah says they had light in their dwellings. Be'eretz Goshen im ksivkan came over makos achiros. So interesting enough, by the other plagues, the Torah goes out of its way to say that the plague did not affect Goshen, which is where the Jewish populace was living. It affected the rest of Egypt, not Goshen. Here it doesn't say that in Goshen it was light. Rather, what does it say? That there was light in their dwellings. He says, so Chizkuni writes, Sho'u sho'u rabosenu, shone makazu, the rabbis write, the Makah of Choshech, the plague of darkness, was different than all of the other plagues. How so? This is amazing. Sha'afilu kishahaya Yisrael b'beis ha-mitzri b'mitzrayim, haya or imo. That wherever the Jew went, there was light for him. Meaning that even if he ventured into Egypt proper, and he walked into the home of an Egyptian, There was still light for the Jew even amidst the darkness of the Egyptian. Now, this is very dramatic, because if you think about it, the other plagues, you know, if there was an outbreak, there was aura of wild animals. If the Jew wanted to remain safe from wild animals, where did he have to stay? Then stay in Goshen. And if he ventured into Egypt, you know, he took his life in his own hands. And that's true for all of the other plagues. You were safe in Goshen, but if you venture out of Goshen, you're in big trouble. And yet here, the Chizkuni points out that when it came to the plague of darkness, no, even if the Jew ventured out of Goshen, he was still safe. He was still going to have light. He was still going to have light, no matter where he went. So look what the Aruch Haim HaKadosh writes in number 12. The obvious question is, why is this Makkah, why is this plague different than the other plagues? So the Aruch Haim writes so beautifully. He says, Omru Rabbasinu Zuchorom Lebracha. The rabbis write, Ki harishoim miskasim b'choshech. The wicked are blanketed by darkness, covered in darkness. V'hu asher kisa ha-mitzrim harishoim. And this is what blanketed the wicked Egyptians. U'kineged ha-tzadikim aleihem yizrach Hashem baruch hu v'o'avav kitzeis ha-shemesh. So the Aruch Haim HaKadosh says something absolutely amazing. The Aruch Haim HaKadosh says, you know what choshech was? And this is a very dramatic explanation. But he says choshech was an external display of their inner darkness. The Egyptians were so consumed by anger, by animosity, by rage, by hatred, that that inner darkness, that inner blackness, that inner choshech came spilling out and colored and shaped their external circumstances. You know, there's an amazing, the Stipler Gaon points out, by the second of the 10 plagues, there's the frogs. The Torah says, Vata'al hatzvardeya. The frog, the Torah uses lashon of singular. The frog came up on the banks of the Nile. So what does Rashi quotes the Medrash that says, what happened? The frog came up on the banks. Now what did the Egyptians do? They started hitting it. And every time they hit it, little frogs came off. But there's an obvious question. What's the obvious question? Stop hitting it. Right? Again, it's good advice. If a big frog shows up right at your doorstep and you try to shoo it away, you hit it, and little frogs come off, stop hitting it. Logical. Stop compounding the problem. So asks the Stipler Gaon, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, why do they keep hitting it, even though there are more frogs coming off? The Stipler says the Egyptians were known for their terrible tempers. They suffered from the terrible midah of kas, the terrible midah of anger. And anger is a blinding emotion. When you're angry, you do things that are clearly detrimental. And you know what? You can't stop yourself, but you choose not to stop yourself. You become so consumed by the anger and the animosity that you just want to vent your fury, even though what? You're compromising yourself in the process. The Aruch Haim HaKadosh says, the Egyptians are so consumed by their inner darkness that the darkness can't be housed within anymore, and it literally comes spilling out into the external trappings of their life. The Aruch Haim HaKadosh says Choshech was an external manifestation of terrible and horrific internal darkness. And it makes me upset. On the other hand, Ulechol b'nei Yisrael arba moshel osam. What does that mean? The Jewish people were just beginning to gather their optimism. The Jewish people were just becoming a nation of dreamers, were becoming a hopeful nation, were becoming a people who were filled with the incredible light of optimism. Says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, the drama of this Makkah is what was happening. The person you are on the inside influences the external trappings of your life. Who you are internally absolutely shapes your external world. The Egyptians are blanketed by darkness because that's what they have on the inside, and it's immobilizing darkness. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael hayar b'moshel sam. But for the Jews, they are overbrimming with the light of optimism, the light of hope, the light of dreams, the light of actualizing and reaching future milestones, the light of destiny. They're brimming with excitement about what life has to offer for them. And when you possess inner light, the amazing part is that goes with you no matter where you travel in life. It's with you in Goshen, and it's with you if you travel into Egypt. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael hayar b'moshvosam. Their inner light illuminated their world. And remember, this was not, lest you think that everything was okay, This was the Jewish people that had suffered terribly for the last 210 years. This was the Jewish people that saw their babies thrown into the Nile. This was the Jewish people that saw their babies built into the bricks that ultimately built the Egyptian pyramids. These are the people that still felt the crack of the whip against their backs. These are the people that still bore the physical and emotional scars of terrible and barbaric servitude. But what did they do? They made a choice. They could be like the Egyptians, be consumed by anger, rage, animosity, hate. And you know what? The world goes black. The world goes dark. You're consumed by your choshech. Or you can choose to go ahead and focus on that which is good. Despite the imperfections, despite the fact that life is not easy, despite the fact that you have many real physical and emotional scars, you can choose to focus on the light. They chose to focus on the light, and that light illuminated their world all around them. Why is this important? Because perhaps this is the very message of Kiddush HaChodesh. Take a look at number 13. Rashi says over here the following. Rashi says, so again, remember, what comes out of the Makkah of Choshech is that the only thing that dispels the darkness of light, the darkness of night, is the light you create for yourself. Right? No one's going to create that light for you. No one's going to give it to you. No one's going to deliver happiness to your doorstep. If you want to be happy, if you want to be Ulachol B'nei Yisrael Arba Moshe Osam, you have to work on that for yourself. Because otherwise, it is so easy to become an Egyptian who is stifled with inner darkness that ultimately creates external darkness. Ultimately, the power of this Makkah teaches us that who you are within shapes your external world. Now go to number 13. Says Rashi, Hazeh. So this is commenting on the post that we quoted before. Hachodesh Hazeh Lachem. This month is for you, the first of all months. So Rashi says something amazing. Rashi says, Niskasha Moshe Amolat Halavana. Moshe Rabbeinu had difficulty conceptualizing what the moon was supposed to look like at the beginning of the month. He couldn't figure it out. He could have God said the moon is supposed to look like this, and Moshe Rabbeinu could not figure out what God was talking about. Be'ezashir. How big or how small does the moon have to be in order to go ahead and sanctify the new moon? And I'll tell you, this always bothered me. This Rashi always bothered me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally has to draw Moshe Rabbeinu, give Yachal a picture of what the moon is supposed to look like. And it's always bothered me because this is Moshe Rabbeinu. Like, this is the man ultimately who spoke to God face to face in a conversational tone, something that no other person ever did or ever will do. Moshe Rabbeinu was unique. And you're telling me that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to speak to God face to face has difficulty with some astronomical issue? Really? He speaks to God. He speaks to God. He's accomplished. He's more angelic than man. And yet he can't figure out what the moon is supposed to look like when there's Kiddush HaChodesh. What is Rashi referring to? Take a look at number 14. There's a moving pasuk in Shir HaShirim. The pasuk says, Amishkavi Balelos, on my bed at night, Bikashti Es She'ahava Nafshi, I reached out, I desired the one whom my soul loves, Bikashtiv v'lo mitzasiv. I have reached out, I have sought him, but I did not find him. So remember, Shir HaShirim is written as a love ballad between a man and a woman. It's supposed to be a metaphor ultimately for the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So here Shlomo HaMelech describes a very dramatic scene. So what, one of the partners is in bed at night and yearns, desires for the other one. I reach out for my loved one, but I can't find him. I don't know what happened to my loved one. So the Medrash number 15 says, what is this referring to? Dover acha mishkavi balilos. What night are we talking about? Listen to this dramatic Medrash. Ze laila shal Mitzrayim. This refers to the night of Egypt. And what night is it referring to? This night over here of Achodesh Hazelachem. On that night, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, he gives Moshe the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. What happens? Bikashtiv es sha'ava nafshi. Zeve Moshe, bikashtiv v'lo mitzasiv. The Medrash says that who's talking in this pasuk? This is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking about God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I stood there on that night. I stood there in the night of Egypt. And I looked for you. And I desired you. And I wanted to find the one who I love. And I looked around the emotional and I could not find you. What's happening over here? Go back up now to number 13. Rashi, for just a moment. You know what's happening here? Moshe Rabbeinu was staying there in the night of Egypt. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Moshe, here's the deal. There's some light in the sky. When you see that little bit of light, that's ultimately the sign that the new month is upon you. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't see the light. Ribono Shel Olam, all I see is darkness. I'm looking for the light. I'm looking for the light. I'm looking for the good. I'm looking for the optimism. I'm looking for the hope. But all I see is night all around me. And what does the Ribono Shel Olam say to Moshe Rabbeinu? HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. If you want light, you have to create it for yourself. If you want light, you must generate it on your own. You know, my friends, this is a very important lesson. God gives us opportunities. God gives us time. God doesn't give us light. God doesn't give us hope. God doesn't give us optimism. God doesn't give us dreams. Those are all things we must do for ourselves. The greatest challenge of the human condition is, one of the greatest challenges, is that people wait around for others to do things for them, right? You should really be doing this for me, and you should be doing that for me. And this happens all the time. It happens in relationships where it can happen in a marriage where a spouse expects another to do something for them. It happens often with parents and children, with children and parents, with friends. And when HaKadosh Baruch, so Moshe Rabbeinu is standing there, Ribono Shel Olam, I'm standing here, I'm Mishkadi Balelos, I'm standing here at night, and all I want more than anything is to be able to see the light in the darkness. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, you know what your mistake is? You're looking heavenward to find the light. Don't look heavenward, look inward. This is the juxtaposition between HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, this first mitzvah, and the Makkah of Choshech. What was the message of Choshech? The message of Choshech was that you have to create your own light. And if you create your own light in life, that will dispel the darkness. But if you're waiting for someone else to give you light, if you're waiting for someone else to give you happiness, to give you joy, to give you optimism, you're going to be waiting for a long time. And while you're waiting, you know what happens? Your soul will fill with darkness. And when your soul can no longer go ahead and hold all that darkness will spill over into your external life and will color anything and everything you see. And right after that, the Torah gives us the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. What is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh? The mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh is finding the light within the darkness. You go outside at the beginning of the month, and the truth is, there's a lot more darkness than there is light. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu is, this mitzvah teaches us the concept of focus. Focus on the light. Create the light for yourself. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, and by extension telling Klal Yisrael, you're going to be a free people. And you know, sometimes in life, people operate with what we call a Magia Li attitude. So what does Magia Li mean? It's coming to me, right? Everything should fall into my lap. Everything should fall into place. It's not fair, right? I've waited this long for this. I've waited that long for this. And it hasn't happened. And the truth is, 9 out of 10 times, if you've been waiting for something and it hasn't happened, it's usually because you haven't tried hard enough, or you haven't tried in the right way. Because remember, you could expend a lot of effort in life, but it's not necessarily the right effort. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. If you want light in life, if you want good, if you want tov, if you want dreams, if you want optimism, if you want hopes, if you want aspirations, if you want goals, don't wait for someone else to give them to you. Don't wait for someone else to help you reach them. Don't wait for God to send it showering down into your soul. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. If you want light in this world, you have to make that happen for yourself. If you want light, you have to choose to see the light. You have to choose to see the good. You have to choose what to focus on. And you have to be motivated enough to make things happen for yourself in life. That's the message of this first mitzvah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Klal Yisrael, you're going to be a free people. And with freedom comes all of these beautiful opportunities. For Kiddusha Sazman, you have the opportunity for your moments, the opportunity to make the most of your time, and the opportunity for Yomim Tovim, and the opportunity to be assert your theological supremacy. All of these incredible things. The most important, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just realize, your life will be what you make of it. The amount of light you have is dependent to the amount, is directly correlated to the amount of effort you expend. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. If you want a new beginning, if you want light, and remember, light doesn't mean the absence of darkness. Light just means the ability to focus on the light despite all the darkness. If that's the life you want, then understand the power to achieve that, the power to attain that, is truly within your own hands. Amen. we'll stop over here.
Very much. Have a good job.
Here.